Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live from 101.3 KPCG. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, CNN got busted for some fake news. We have that story. Also, one group, one segment in the U.S. is getting fatter. It's not people either. We'll have details about that. And the United Nations is upset with President Trump for, as they say, undermining the civil liberties of ISIS jihadists. I didn't know they had civil liberties. We'll take a look at that and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live. We're on at 101.3 KPCG, online at kpcg.fm. That goes around the world. And also, thetrumpet.com. Live link there as well. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turgeon here on this Tuesday edition. We were excited last night because Russell Westbrook of our Oklahoma City Thunder, the same Russell Westbrook that I was behind the line in Target one time, is the MVP of the National Basketball Association. So he's come a long way since our days there in the Target aisle together.
And, of course, you remember him as being fiscally responsible, buying in bulk.
He bought in bulk that day. He certainly did. So it's always interesting when you see famous people just around town. But so, he won the MVP last night. And he got, I forget what it was, 69 out of the 100 votes or something like that. So he beat out Kawhi Leonard and his old buddy James Harden, who used to play for the Thunder as well. So exciting night for him. He gave a pretty good speech. I haven't seen all of it. You said you watched it. He was pretty thankful to his family, to God, as he mentioned it, and his brother in particular.
Yes, and he even thanked, I mean, every specific job title in the entire organization. So you know that's going to take a while. He thanked all the fans, too. And he really came across as humble and heartfelt. I thought it was a really moving speech, especially when he was talking about his family and just the years of sacrifice running through his head while he was giving that. You could tell it was really emotional for him.
Yeah, those professional athletes put in a lot of work to get to that level. So we were excited to see him win that award for the Oklahoma City Thunder. And he had a historic season in many ways. He's the first to average a triple-double since 1962, and that's the biggest thing probably. He had the highest usage rate ever, 41.7% of possessions, I guess, he was using. He had the second most points per game, 31.6 for an MVP since 1988. Third most assists per game, 10.4 for MVP since 1990. And the most rebounds per game, 10.7 for an MVP since 2004. There were maybe a few negative stats, but we will ignore those. He shot a lot, so you're going to have some. And a high usage rate means you're going to have some turnovers. So anyway, we'll ignore those stats, and we'll just bask in the glow of the positive statistics for Russell Westbrook.
The thing about him is that I don't even care about his good stats or his bad stats. If you're just watching him play, you know what kind of impact he's having. You know that he's creating chaos for the other team, and they're just really confused as to how to stop him. I mean, they'll put three guys on him, and they can't stop him, and especially if his guys are actually making shots, he can make the perfect pass to the guy who is wide open in the corner.
He plays very hard all the time, and that's probably the thing that most fans like about him the most, is he's going to give 100% every time he's out there. Doesn't seem to take plays off. He plays every game kind of like it's the last game, and that's good to see. That's probably a complaint that I think casual fans of the NBA would have, is that some games seem like they're kind of not playing that hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they are, but you know, when you're playing 82 games or 81 games, what is it?
82,
yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes it looks like people are coasting a little bit. Or they just flat out do take the night off and they don't play. And then the people that paid to go see him, you think, well, I paid to see that guy, and he doesn't want to play tonight because he's tired.
Right.
So I understand the players, they don't want to wear themselves out, but you know, when he paid to get there, you know, I don't care. I paid for the show. So you like to see him play. So people like that about Russell Westbrook, that he plays very hard and gives it his all.
Right, and I don't think he missed a game all season. They might have held him out for the team's last road game because at that point they were stuck in their playoff spot. But even the team's last home game, the last game of the season, he was playing. So he really was going all out every single game of the season. And that's just something that, like you said, you don't see it enough. Just watching him play, I always feel like I would love playing with someone like that. It's kind of strange to me that he is such a controversial figure. When you see that he's playing harder than everyone else and that he's going to go down with the ship with his team and not jump as soon as it gets difficult, that's a really rare trait to see today.
Yeah, so very good news for him, and we're happy to see that here in Oklahoma City area. Here are some other headlines today. CNN accepts resignations of three involved in retracted story. Only three? So this is what it says. CNN accepted the resignations Monday of three journalists involved in a retracted story about a supposed investigation into a pre-inaugural meeting between an associate of President Donald Trump and the head of a Russian investment fund. Sounds like a juicy story. The story was posted on the network's website on Thursday and was removed with all links disabled. Never a good sign if you're the author. Where did the article go, and how come the links are disabled? CNN immediately apologized to Anthony
Scaramucci.
There you go. Thanks for helping me out there. The Trump transition team member who was reported to be involved in the meeting. Sorry about that. The story's author, Thomas Frank, was among those who resigned, according to a network executive who requested anonymity. Also losing their jobs were Eric Lichtblau, an assistant managing editor to CNN's Washington Bureau, and Lex Harris, head of the investigations unit. CNN, in initially taking down the story, said it didn't meet its editorial standards. I don't know what those are, but didn't meet it. The episode is a damaging blow, they say, for a network that Trump has frequently derided as fake news and for a story that never even made it onto any of CNN's television networks. So not a great look there for CNN. They clearly have their position about a lot of things, particularly President Trump. And so they have three that resign over this fake story. But yet, if you look at the website, you know, today or over the last few days, it's the same. They're beating the same drum. And I always look at things like this and I think, well, I'm sure those three were involved, but a lot of times it feels like they're the fall people, the fall guys. Like, well, resign and we'll cover it up here. But it goes deeper than just a couple of journalists with bad information.
It's also telling that they never issued an apology to the president. They issued an apology to one of his people, but obviously, the end game of that is to slander the president and to undermine what he's trying to do. They did not apologize toward him, and that just reveals once again how anti-Trump they are for a supposedly objective news network. What's also interesting about this is that apparently Jeff Zucker, I think he's like, what is he, the manager of CNN, something, some high-ranking title, he refused to even say anything about it or explain what the retractions were all about. I mean, it took him at least a couple of days to say anything. And so even a lot of people within CNN were getting upset about that, how he just really wasn't taking any accountability for what had happened.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of the stories you see on different information sites, we'll call them, they're just opinion pieces anyway. And maybe that's better for the journalist or for the writer. Because you could, maybe it's easier to get around that and say, well, it's just my opinion. You right. know, you don't have to prove it or establish some facts. And maybe that's why they go more in that direction. But so that's an interesting situation there. The battle over the fake news. Who's fake? Fake. Everyone's fake.
You do learn a lot about different news outlets by their opinion pieces. Because even if the opinions are really violently left, it doesn't mean that you can even expect the supposedly objective reporting not to be tainted by that. If they're putting out leftist opinion pieces, that's also going to be in their regular reporting as well, at least now. And even going the other way, certain websites are conservative, so their opinion pieces are going to be conservative and their news is going to slant to the conservative. Hardly ever anymore do you see a website or any type of outlet that highlights problems on both sides where they exist.
Well, it's interesting, even with just the media's digging into some of these, oh, I don't know, scandals, supposed scandals, whatever they are, with, say, Russia or other situations, it's almost like they have to be careful, because if they dig too deep, they might find out that the Democrats actually are heavily involved or were heavily involved. Not to say one side is better off than the other when it comes to those things, but they obviously are very much, like in the case of CNN, they're obviously trying to help the liberal side and go against the conservatives. But the more they dig into it, the more you find, wait a second, there actually has been some things going on here, but it's you know, there's been a lot of people involved. So they are almost kind of caught in a way, because the more they want to talk about Russia, the more they want to talk about any of these situations that they've been getting into. Well, you look at the past administration. It's not as clean as they would hope it would be.
Oh, the irony and the hypocrisy of them talking about Russia being involved in President Trump's victory, when Hillary Clinton talked about a reset button in Syria with Russia, and then Barack Obama was caught on a hot microphone,
right,
talking to Dmitry Medvedev about how when he gets reelected, he can do a lot more to favor Russia. Those are actual tangible incidents caught on camera with the audio right there for everyone to hear, where they're favoring Russia. And so for them to talk about the other side being in cahoots with Russia is just outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, if that exact, like the hot mic thing, if that had happened now with the current administration, you can imagine. The TV would melt.
We would never hear the end of that.
No.
For the next 50 years.
It would be grounds for all kinds of things, they would say. Well, here's an interesting one from the Wall Street Journal. Big story today. Google slapped with a $2.7 billion EU fine over search results. EU orders Google to treat rival comparison shopping services equally in its search results. The EU's antitrust regulator on Tuesday fined Google a record €2.71 billion. $2.71 billion. There's so many different currencies out there.
Oh, the confusion.
The confusion. just charge them in Bitcoin so we could get on with it. For favoring its own comparison shopping service in search results and ordered the search giant to apply the same methods to rivals as its own when displaying their services. The decision, if it is upheld, would force Google to reshape the way it presents search results for products in Europe, the latest move by Brussels to rein in the tech world. The decision could also have further-reaching implications for other Google products and services, as well as those from competitors. It could affect, obviously, other companies like Amazon, Facebook, or anyone else that offers to search for products or services. So a big ruling, a big fine. The EU... a lot of people think they're unfairly coming after some American companies, and this is just more of that.
Well, can't you see why certain nations would want to leave the European Union when they have regulations that it would seem would put us to shame? And we have had a lot of regulations imposed upon us lately as well. But what do you really expect when Google has a search engine, but it also has a lot of other different platforms? Do you really expect them not to favor their other platforms to sort of market themselves? That's only the natural result of those types of markets online. And also, if you're talking about search engines, Google's not the only search engine.
Right.
There's other search engines that will then market their other products as well. It's not like it's just Google doing this one thing. They're all going to be doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, there is a choice. You can use other search engines. Google just happens to be the dominant one. They say Tuesday's decision will also likely renew complaints from U.S. firms that they are being unfairly targeted in the EU. The EU wouldn't do that. They wouldn't be unfair, would they? They're doing the same thing they're accusing Google of doing. Something European officials strenuously deny. Are you guys being unfair to us? No.
Nine.
U.S. companies are also under scrutiny in Europe for their tax affairs, as well as for their privacy practices, leading to decisions against firms like Google and Facebook. Google, for instance, they say this week faces a hearing in France over that country's order to apply the EU's right to be forgotten. From the right to be forgotten. from search engines globally, not just for searches in the EU. So it's so interesting when you have companies that are international and they affect people all around the world, and then one block of nations says, "Well, we don't like what you're doing, so we're going to fine you." Well, who are you going to appeal to? The judge of the world? I mean, I know they have their ways of going about these things, but in any event, it does highlight, I think, just the fact that the EU certainly does not have the best interest of the U.S. at heart, obviously, when it comes to finance or trade or any of those things.
Well, I do wonder about that, because Google is an American company and they're being sued for money by Europe. So I wonder if Europe actually even has the authority to take that money. It just does make you wonder, especially when you're talking about world government or different world organizations, world police, whatever it is. How much authority do they really have when it comes to specific nations, especially if those specific nations are not exactly willing to submit to the world government?
Yeah, and you can see how this could heat up with trade wars, because, you know, if you're in the U.S., you'd think, oh, okay, you want to do that? Well, what about your services and products? I'm sure we could find something we don't like about it and do the same thing to you. And then you have trade wars. So there's a lot on thetrumpet.com about trade wars. There are going to be trade wars coming, and you can learn a lot more about that there at thetrumpet.com. So, I mean, I think a lot of Americans are happy to see President Trump kind of stand up to the world a little bit, and it's probably good on some level. But then on another level, you end up with these battles, these trade wars.
It's a really fine line there. That it's hard to figure out how confrontational to be versus how conciliatory, maybe, when really you don't want to stand for certain nations abusing their power like that. And especially when America doesn't have to submit to that, when it's the most powerful nation in the entire world. But at the same time, you could provoke so much wrath that a bunch of different nations like the EU, you know, 28 or so nations, could gang up on you all at once and maybe even bring someone like China in. China's not very friendly to the U.S. either. If all those nations got together, America can't really take them all on at once, it would seem.
Yep, we could be in some hot water. So there is a lot about that on thetrumpet.com that shows you where those things are heading. Here's a story from Reuters about the minimum wage. We talked about this a while ago. They want to raise the minimum wage. They have been doing it. But you can't just make money out of nothing. Seattle employers cut hours after latest minimum wage rise, according to a new study. Well, if you're a small business, or maybe even a large business, I mean, there's only so much money you have. Your products, your services, you only get so much for them. And when they say, well, you have to pay your employees more, what do they do? Well, either would raise their prices on their products or services, or they just cut the hours of the employees. Seattle law that requires many businesses to pay a minimum wage of at least $13 an hour has left low-wage workers with less money in their pockets because some employers cut working hours, a study released on Monday said. Low-wage workers on average now clock 9% fewer hours and earn $125 less each month than before the Pacific Northwest city set one of the highest minimum wages in the nation, according to the University of Washington research. Seattle, which has a booming economy and a strong technology sector, is midway through an initiative to increase its minimum wage for all employers to $15 an hour. The city is at the forefront of a nationwide push by Democratic elected officials and organized labor in targeting $15 for all workers. Lawmakers in California, the nation's most populous state, voted last year to increase the minimum wage to $15 an hour by 2022. Elected officials in several states, including New York and Oregon, and large cities such as Chicago, broke, have in the last 2 years approved their own minimum pay hikes. So, you know, everybody wants to make more money, no problem, but if you just make a rule, make a law that you have to pay everybody more, again, where's that money going to come from? They don't have it to pay in a lot of cases, these employers, so they cut the hours.
Wouldn't it help for people to know math? In this situation, people could realize that this sounds good, and that's really what it's all about. It sounds good to people who are potential voters. Those lawmakers are not naive enough to think that raising the minimum wage is going to have no negative impacts at all. They realize that hours are going to be cut. People are going to lose their jobs if they raise the minimum wage that drastically. We're not even talking about raising it from $7.50 to $13 an hour in a matter of years. They've pretty much done it overnight, it looks like, maybe in a year or two. When you do it that quickly, especially, you're causing a lot of problems, but a lot of people don't understand that that is really going to be troublesome for them.
Right. Yeah, you don't get a wage increase in a vacuum. It's not like, oh, good, I make more money now and everything else will remain the same. Nothing remains the same.
Right.
It's all interconnected. So it was the same thing with the Obamacare. As much as the media tried to say everyone had free health care and it was amazing or something to that effect. It was crazy. There was no. Most people could not afford it. There might have been some situations where it was a better deal. But basically, it was taking money from the taxpayers and giving handouts to people that couldn't afford health insurance. And so they said, you know, really, if you look at what's happening here with raising this minimum wage, it is giving people less money. In some cases, people are losing jobs. And so what does it do? It forces them to rely on the government. The health care, same thing. It's forcing people to rely on the federal government to give you a handout because you're in a position, you're put in a position where you are not self-sufficient anymore within the economy. Is that on purpose? Is that an accident? I would think it's on purpose.
It is disturbing to think about how big the federal government has gotten. It used to be, what, maybe a few hundred or a few thousand employees, if that, back at the nation's founding. And now we're at several million people who work for the federal government. A lot of them, when they shut down the government over maybe a budget debate, they can go leave work for no problem at all. I mean, it's not like their loss is even felt, but the government's just so bloated now, and there are so many departments that are unnecessary, and there are so many regulations and restrictions, and now it's almost turning into a nanny state, and it does seem like that was the intent the entire time, was to get people to depend on the government, and then the government can depend on their votes. That's really what happens when the left does things like this. They get all of the poor to completely trust in the government for everything that they need.
Not a good situation. So some of the comments in the story, people were like, yeah, who didn't know this was going to happen? And someone else made a good point. If you'd like to make more money, become more skilled. So
it really is just a trap, though. I mean, obviously, you can get welfare benefits or you can have the minimum wage increased, but that only gives you the incentive to stay at that level because you're comfortable still at the bottom because they have at least raised the standards of the lower class. But people do not desire to climb the ladder anymore, which is the entire point of the American dream.
And it's sort of this entitlement mentality too, that, well, I deserve $15 an hour. Well, maybe you don't. I mean, it depends on what job you're doing.
Exactly.
There is a reality. Some jobs, you know, there's more value to them than others. But anyway, that's what's happening. Seattle employers are cutting hours after latest minimum wage rise. So we'll see where that leads. It's interesting that Chicago's doing that too, because another headline today is that Illinois is almost like Venezuela now. I mean, their credit rating is like, what, junk? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not in a good spot. So there's a lot about that at thetrumpet.com as well. Here's another one from the USA Today. There's a segment of the population that's getting fatter in the U.S., and it's the pets. You've been seeing some fat cats around your neighborhood?
I've been seeing one in my parents' house.
I have seen this. I saw the other day I was taking a walk, and it almost startled me. I was like, whoa, what's that thing? And I was like, oh, that's a cat. It's one of the fattest cats I've ever seen. Just sitting there looking at me. They say it's no secret that Americans' waistlines have been expanding for years. And a new report shows that our pets are following suit. Banfield Pet Hospital's 2017 State of Pet Health report found that one in three pets who, by the way, pets never give that any thumbs up, that report. Thank you. They give it two paws. Report found that one in three pets who visited Banfield pet facilities in 2016 were overweight or obese. It's hard to break the news to the cat. You know? Yeah, it's hard to tell you you're obese.
They're just going there for their regular weekly checkup, yeah. Saying hi to the doctor, getting a lollipop.
They don't care. The annual report details health habits of the 2.5 million dogs and 500,000 cats who visit facilities across the country in 2016. Dr. Kirk Brunninger, a veterinarian research associate at the hospital, said they noticed a trend in pets gaining weight 5 years ago. More than 20 disease conditions have been linked with pets being overweight. Some may say, my pet looks cute, being pudgy or plump. But it contributes to diseases. They said a healthy weight could prolong a pet's life and delay chronic disease. Probably not a surprise. The veterinarian notes that the report found that the prevalence of overweight pets coincided with an uptick in arthritis and other problems. So why are they getting fatter? Same reason humans get fat. Mm-hmm. Not getting enough exercise, eating too much food. And also they say the pet owners really consider the pets a part of the family and they give them lots of treats. And so they're fat now.
And animals, I don't think, exercise regularly, especially if they're in the house. So it's not like they can have those treats and then stay the exact same size.
I got to tell you, though, I mean, you know, a really fat cat is kind of cute.
It is.
They're just so huge.
We had one that was bordering on panther size, and my parents recently gave it away, but I was just shocked at how big it was. After a while, it became normal to me, but then All the people who would come over, we were watching a game downstairs or something, they'd see the cat, and they'd say, what is that thing?
Put a saddle on it. The horse got in the house. Yeah, so it's a problem, I guess. And then people do get pretty close to their pets, and obviously you don't want to. You could abuse an animal. I mean, by giving them too much,
exactly,
to where
that's
they get sick, and so. But I guess what do we expect to happen? You know, if the humans are getting that way, the animals are going to follow suit,
right? And I will say, to be fair, I've definitely seen a lot fatter cats than the one in my parents' house. But the one my parents had was probably 25, 30 pounds,
wow,
something like that, maybe bigger than that, and. To make it a little worse, she didn't like being touched at all. So any baby who showed any interest would probably be getting scratched.
Wow.
Big reason we got rid of it.
Yeah, a fat cat that doesn't like to be touched. That's what good are you?
They're pretty much inviting the touch.
Yeah.
And they reject it.
You're a tease. Well, here's a good story. It proves that you're never too old, I guess. A 61-year-old Las Vegas grandpa seeks a spot with the NBA. He wants to play in the National Basketball Association. He doesn't think he can make the actual teams, but he thinks he can play in the Summer League. NBA Summer League is just around the corner, and that, of course, if you're not familiar, it's for rookies or free agents that are trying to crack the NBA roster. Each team will make a Summer League team. They'll work out the guys and see how they look. Fans are anxious to pack the Thomas and Mack Center to find a seat, but one Las Vegas grandfather is training to find a roster spot with the team. He said, I'm trying to get myself into shape, better than I have ever been before. I'm trying to get into the Summer League. He's 61 years old. His name is Kelvin Roberts. He said, I want to go out against the best, the youngest. That makes me play better. I just have a goal I have to reach, and I'm not going to let anything stand in my way to get there. Now, he's not some scrub. He did play in college, and he was drafted in the fourth round in 1980. He didn't play. He never cracked the NBA regular rosters. He did go play 15 seasons professionally in Spain, Italy, Israel, Turkey, Istanbul, and even won a championship in Austria. But he said, you know what? I want to give it another shot. So he's just trying to make the Summer League. I hope he makes it. I'd love to see how he does. 61 years old.
I'd love to see how the other guys treat him, too. A lot of the time, players are not too merciful. If they have anything about you that they can point out when they're talking trash, they're obviously going to point out his age, and they're going to be relentless about it probably. So it'd be interesting to see how he stands up to that.
Yeah, it would be. I would love to see it. I mean, all these guys are trying to prove themselves and hopefully get on a roster. So, you know, I don't know if some team would give him a roster spot because obviously he's not going to make it. But, yeah, if somebody's got an extra roster spot, why not? Give him a couple of games.
Sell some tickets that way, too. I mean, there are certain people who you can put on a minor league team, and obviously in the minor leagues, in the developmental leagues, it's not as important for the team to be winning, but you do at least want to develop some players and then also sell some tickets and make some money for the organization. Having someone like that on the team would definitely draw some fans.
Maybe he could join that 3-on-3 league.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
But so who knows? Hopefully the guy makes it. 61 years old, trying to get into the NBA Summer League. I'm only 38. I should see if I can get into that, too.
Gives us hope, doesn't it?
Yeah, except he was really good when he was young. But never mind
well,
that.
You're really good.
Well, he's big, too. And I'm not sure how big he is, but he's obviously 6'7", something like that. He looks pretty good. They had a picture of him. And he looks pretty fit. Like, you wouldn't think he was 61. You know, the great Wilt Chamberlain. He died recently or a few years ago, but I think even up in his 50s and I think 60s, he was still dominant when he would play guys. There's stories about him playing just pickup games with NBA players and just dominating them. But I just don't think he could get up and down for a full season like he used to. But, you know, hey, if you're playing half court or something, or it's more of a relaxed game, he was still dominant even at that older age.
Well, isn't that also true of Michael Jordan? He's at least one of the owners of the Charlotte Hornets now, and there was a story about him taking every guy on the roster one-on-one, and he beat every single one of them. And he's, what is he, in his 40s or 50s now?
50s, yeah, he just just got past 50, I think. So, oh yeah, you know, really, one of the big things for those guys is if they can keep the extra weight off, mm-hmm. which is hard to do, especially they're so finely tuned when they're playing, and then obviously you don't keep up that same workout, and then you end up like Charles Barkley,
right.
Shaq. Those guys are huge now.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, it'll be interesting to see if this guy makes it. It's always interesting to see, too, just the talent level difference. You'll see a guy in summer league just dominate, and then he barely cracks like the NBA roster. Just different levels of ability and talent.
It is hard to believe how much of a difference there is, because obviously just the chances of someone as a kid achieving that dream, it's microscopic. We usually don't wake our kids up to that reality for quite a while, but it's really difficult to get that far. Kevin Durant, for example, he pretty much slept in the gym every single night of the summer and was playing basketball and doing drills all day as he was growing up.
Yeah, and end up being about 7 feet, which helps, too.
It does.
You're listening to Trumper Radio Live here on 101.3. Thanks for joining us today and this Tuesday edition. You can follow us on Twitter if you'd like to at KPCGFM, and email us, too, comments@kpcg.fm. It's always interesting to see people do something later in life where, you know, most people are kind of winding it down, and they're like, nah, I'm going to do something. I'm going to, whether it's something new or I'm going to rekindle a love for something that I did when I was younger, I think that's neat to see.
And look how long they stay alive, too. Mm-hmm. Whenever they have that mentality that they're going to keep on doing things as if age didn't matter at all, they live to be 100 almost every time. Every story like that, this guy probably has decades left.
Yeah. Or he'll die on the court, so he'll be going.
Yeah,
he'll be
that
happy.
Might be a rough situation for him.
He'll be happy one way or the other. Key David program's coming up here in a little bit on KPCG. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Brent Noctegal today. He's live here from Edmond, Oklahoma. You can check that out. And stop and check out thetrumpet.com. Fascinating story today. Top story. Now the age of expression suppression. That rhymes. There's a new religion sweeping across America. This is by Dennis Leap, who's also the host of Just the Best Literature. And it talks about not being able to freely express beliefs, ideas, or opinions. That's a major issue in a lot of places, particularly in colleges and even in the high schools, where people are afraid to say, you know, I don't agree with the common thought on that, because they're going to be severely rebuked for it. And in some cases, you get in severe trouble for just saying you don't agree with an opinion that's out there. So people are kind of going the other way and saying, I'm just not going to say anything.
Well, humans naturally don't like to try to be brainwashed, and that really is what education has turned into. They've opened up the mind and said, here's the information, we're going to funnel into it. You don't have a say in whether or not you believe it. You don't get a chance to logically think through the ramifications of those different ideologies. You just have to say, yes, this is what I believe. And a lot of the time, the unspoken thing is you're going to face a lot of persecution and maybe even violence if you don't go along with it.
And it's even getting more serious now. There's been a few stories lately where people didn't come out and be opposed to, say, the homosexual movement. But because they didn't come out and vigorously support it, they got in trouble as well. There was a story last week about a politician over there in the UK. He didn't come out against it, but he just didn't, you know, say a whole lot. I think he even voted for it, but it wasn't enough. They, you have to, you know, be fanatical in believing whatever the common belief is that the media pushes out there. And the funny thing about that is, in most cases, I think whatever the media pushes out there or Hollywood pushes out there as the norm, I think most people don't feel that way. But yet, because they've got the megaphone, it seems like that's the way everybody thinks. And I don't think that's the case.
That's what I've been noticing recently, just being out, you know, out in California last week and out in public a few times recently. People do not seem like they're all in on the radical left agenda in general. There are some people who you could tell probably would support that. They're a little bit more vocal about it usually. But most people prefer to keep to themselves, mind their own business, do their job, go home to their families. And it's not about radically transforming a country that has already been great for a couple hundred years.
Yeah. So it's always interesting to see the trends and the changes. And this is an interesting one from thetrumpa.com. Now the age of expression, suppression, depression. I'm trying to think of another word that rhymed. Grant, you've got a write-up here for us from theexpress.co.uk. The United Nations blast Trump and May for undermining civil liberties of ISIS jihadists. That seems like an interesting situation there. Without having read much of the article, I'm interested to hear what they have to say. But they feel that ISIS jihadists should have some civil liberties, even though they are murderers and terrorists.
Apparently, we have certainly lambasted the UN on multiple occasions here on the radio and on the website, and for good reason, because they keep on coming out with these absurd statements that the United Nations has, you know, a civil rights type of council or authority, and yet a lot of the time they put Iran and North Korea and, you know, Syria on these types of human rights boards. As farcical as you can get, the most ridiculous thing you could imagine, the United Nations is actually doing. And here's another situation where they are upset that even President Trump would imply that certain torture methods like waterboarding would be okay, as if waterboarding is the big issue and not the crimes that the terrorists are committing.
At some point, I do think that people surrender their civil liberties.
Right.
If you're willing to go murder another human being or group of human beings, I think you've surrendered a few of the normal dignities that a person should have because of your actions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you commit a crime and it's serious enough, what do you surrender? Well, it's your freedom because you go to jail. In some places, it's bad enough where you surrender your life because there's a death penalty. Okay? So would it be the normal thing to do to lock somebody in a cell? Of course not. That'd be horrible. But because of their actions, because of the way they're harming other people and society, and they can't function within it in a good way, they're put somewhere else. They have given up their right to move about freely. If you're willing to be an ISIS jihadist, you've given up your rights, I think, to do just about anything.
Well, those people have descended to the level of savage beasts. They don't behave like someone you would ever want in society. And also the point is that when you have them in captivity, in prison, they know a lot about the entire network. They know a lot about future plans. And so many of them are so committed to their cause that unless you do something to them to make them talk, they're not going to talk. And you won't be able to prevent the next disaster. So who do we really care more about? Some person having a towel over his head and water dripped on him to simulate drowning because he is an animal terrorist? Or do you care more about the thousands of people that could get killed in future attacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's when people are willing to be, again, these terrorists, I think that they should have some fear in them that I don't want to get caught because it's not going to be good for me. And if they don't have any fear of anything and they know they're going to be sort of pampered, well, then they're just going to, that's just more encouragement to continue these radical ways. You have to do something to say, no, we're going to make you afraid to do this.
At this point, probably terrorists rejoice when they're caught by America, because the worst thing we would do to them is waterboard them. And even lately, we don't do that, or we at least don't talk about it because it is so heavily criticized, especially by the media. But where's the huge statement from the UN about North Korea holding an American citizen and beating him into a coma and then returning him only to die about a week later? They don't say anything about nations that actually do commit human rights violations, in that case against a young man who did not commit a crime in any way, most likely. It looked like he was even framed for stealing a banner there in North Korea. He did not do anything on the level of these ISIS terrorists, and yet he was treated far worse. There's no statement about that.
Yeah, that's amazing how they wouldn't be up in arms about that. It seems like they try to just be about as anti-West as you can be. And that seems to be the trend of the United Nations.
Yes, and Melanie Phillips has written about that too. There is a kind of racism on the left and really around the world, especially against cultures. So I don't know if you would call that racism, but basically the crux of it is that the entire world expects more of the West. And because of that, they're held to an entirely different standard than the rest of the world. So Melanie Phillips asked some people at The Guardian, where she used to write, why the Middle East is allowed to get away with this barbarism. And well, those people answered her and said, well, of course they can. They're not the West. We don't expect anything of them. So basically, they're generalizing that entire population and saying that they're not on our level, and so we don't even expect anything good from them to happen at all. That is a kind of racism that they refuse to acknowledge when you marginalize an entire culture like that, and yet they will then turn around and point the finger at the people on the right for being racist. It is that's where we are at. Certain cultures have a free pass to do whatever they want to. And yet the only criticism can be directed at pro-Western democracies. You see that in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, too. The Palestinians are thought of as the victims, and nothing they could ever do could change their victimhood status. And nothing Israel could ever do could change their oppressor status.
Yeah. So does the UN mention what they think the proper way to handle the ISIS jihadists would be? Are they just supposed to restrain them, and or, you know, what's the solution? Because obviously, especially when you look at the UK, I mean, they've been hit pretty hard the last year or two, or I guess even a little more than that. So what's the solution? More civil liberties going to solve it?
Well, clearly they're not in favor of any form of torture or extraction of secret plots against innocent people. They say that the convention would be scuttled and a central load-bearing pillar of international law removed. Again, we're talking about international law. What does that really mean? Why are people in America being held to an international law standard that clearly discriminates against them? That doesn't make any sense in the first place. But this guy, he's Arabic himself, and so maybe he does have some sympathies there. It does make you wonder about that. But he's talking about Mr. Trump's persistent flirtation with a return to torture. He says, mindful of how the American public has, over the last 10 years, become far more accepting of torture.
I don't think the public's become more accepting of it.
That seems like it's the exact opposite of what has happened.
Yeah, it used to just be, you know, kind of one of those things that I guess didn't get a lot of coverage because it's something you do that most of citizens probably don't, you know, care to know too much about. But because they made it such a big deal, I think the opposite's happened, where people are, or at least the media really gets after that. And they name it torture. I don't know. I guess it would be that. But at the same time, if you're willing to go blow yourself up and kill a bunch of people, I think you've probably let go of a lot of your normal rights as a human being.
Right.
So, again, I mean, it's not like anybody would sit there and say, oh, boy, I would just love to see them get tortured or something like that. But at the same time, that's the world we live in. It's a tough world. And if one side's willing to just do whatever they want and the West is held to some sort of hands-off approach, well, you're just sitting there, you're going to get hit over and over again.
Right. I mean, the fact that those people are willing to savagely murder indiscriminately, it doesn't matter who it is, and in a lot of cases they murder people who agree with them because they're blowing up bombs in the Middle East, where a lot of them would actually be sympathetic toward ISIS and some of these other groups. They're just killing everyone in sight. Being waterboarded is a small price to pay. If they're not even facing that type of penalty, basically the terrorists know that they're going to a nice cell and they're going to get three meals a day and they're going to have an hour of exercise time out in the yard. It's not really much of a punishment or a deterrent from them committing those acts.
Yeah. And those methods were used to get information, right, for mm-hmm. the most part. I mean, if somebody was willing to talk, I don't think they would have done that to him. But who knows? I don't know. Maybe they would have. But in any event, it is interesting. They keep talking about these civil liberties and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, the attacks are not stopping. In fact, they're increasing, mm-hmm. especially in the UK over the last year or so.
And again, we're talking about waterboarding. That is a mental trick. They're not even going to drown. They won't be hurt from it. Americans are not doing that to the terrorists to be mean. They are doing it to extract information. It's not just a part of their daily punishment in prison. There is a purpose for it, and that purpose is to save lives. This official from the UN also criticized British Prime Minister Theresa May for intending to strike a chord with a certain sector of the electorate, and it is this expectation that truly worries me. So here he is accusing her of trying to favor torture for political gain. If anything, she's been too weak
yes.
talking about terrorism and approaching it on the internet and trying to get rid of some of their internet propaganda. She has not been strong in the response to these terrorist attacks at all.
Yeah, that's outrageous, because that's the first thing I thought was, well, she's been far too weak on the whole topic.
Exactly.
What would make him happy or the UN happy? Should she come out and support it? But is that the thing that has to happen for it to make the United Nations happy?
That's just about to the point where we are, it would seem. You have to try to come out and say, oh, well, we reject Islamophobia. We don't want all Muslims to be singled out because of this attack. Don't be a racist. Don't hate these people. That's the type of response that is expected. If you say anything less than that, you're going to get these big statements from the UN and a lot of other liberal-leaning media outlets, too.
Yeah, United Nations, man's last great hope, right, for peace, apparently. Yeah, it doesn't seem like they're doing great. express.co.uk, United Nations blast Trump and May for undermining civil liberties of ISIS jihadists. They don't subscribe to civil liberties, which is so interesting. But anyway, so it's an interesting read if you want to check it out, if you want your blood pressure to rise a little bit. One last story here today is from The Spectator. It's kind of interesting in relation to the English language. They say American English has conquered the world. And so this is a write-up from the UK. And they say, should we give a hoot that our language has been corrupted or just back off and call it a day? So they're talking about how Americans, the colloquialisms and so forth, have become very common. And so, the way the English would speak versus Americans is different, obviously. Even within America, you find different expressions, different accents, different ways of expressing yourself in different parts of the country. So, if you go, like, you went to California, mm-hmm. so they're a little different than we would be here. The South is different. It's different accents, different expressions. So anyway, they're talking about this, just the fact that the American English has kind of taken over. And this author says, here in our damp little island over there in Britain, we have mixed feelings about this. English is our language, the gift to the world by which, along with football, cricket, and some other sports, we may well be remembered when otherwise we're one with Nineveh and Tyre.
Wow.
Gone, I guess. And yet it's American English that has conquered the world and us. As Matthew Engel says in his highly entertaining That's the Way It Crumbles, we are often uneasy or plain resentful about this Americanization and have been for the best part of 200 years. plenty of Americanisms, which we no longer even know are immigrants, arrived years ago or during the Great War. Things such as cakewalk, give the game away, railroad as a verb. In the 1920s, there was gangster, down and out, and give a hoot. In the 1960s, we got back off, spin off, and blue collar. 100 years ago, we called office workers black coat rather than white collar, which are both now meaningless to look around in office. Such lists can't be comprehensive. When did cool and laid back arrive? And in any case, Engel takes an ironical view of this. He knows and loves America and many things Americans, as do I. And he said, on election night, I heard one pundit talk about ballpark figures. We don't even have ballparks here. And another say that someone or other would have to step up to the plate, which is as ubiquitous as it is ridiculous. Almost no one in this country who uses it even is aware of its original meaning, the baseball batter who goes to the plate to try to hit a pitch. So they use all these words and phrases, but they're not from England. They're from America.
So England has really capitulated to our dominance of the language, it seems. And they probably do regret that America ever did separate from them. I mean, if you look back at how it was around the time of the Revolution, Britain did start to think of the British citizens here as less than the British citizens back home, even though the people here were actually proud British citizens. I mean, if you think about it, we could still be part of their empire to this day if they hadn't started stepping on the people over here. So that's, I guess, the language is one casualty of that gigantic event in history. There's a lot of other things where if you had Britain and America still as one today, you would not see all these other nations being so belligerent against us.
Yeah, if we were unified like we should be. Although they, in some ways, maybe they're trying to do a little better than that. It couldn't be worse in the last 8 years. But so, but it is interesting when you look at language and how it changes. There are new terms coming out, and maybe you've heard of these, maybe you have not. I can't even say some of these. Chrono referencing. Referencing anything in relationship to its chronological order. Apparently that's a new one. I have not heard that. Axidial. To dial accidentally.
Oh, wow.
I axidialed him or her. Gastrodiplomacy. The art and process of using food as a tool to foster cultural understanding among countries. These are some of the ones that actually sound a little more upper crusty. As it were.
Doesn't that sound like the greatest chance man might have at world peace right now?
Yes.
Bonding over food.
Yes, that's right. Let's see. What is this one? Oh, a seshi. It's a studio musician. You were in a session. You were a seshi.
Makes sense.
So there you go. Commu-fascism. A combination of communist and fascist ideologies. A group of people hijacked democracy using a system of commu-fascism. So that's a new one.
That's relevant.
Yeah. Cubsessed. Obsessed with the Chicago Cubs.
A lot of people do that.
Yeah, especially since they won the World Series. Fanticulate. To fantasize and about speculated conclusions. To daydream about assumed things. Yeah, all kinds of new ones here. So yeah, those are just some of them, but the ones that are probably, I don't know how often those would pop up. Maybe they would in like say, a columnist writing or something to that effect. The thing that is probably more prevalent today would be emojis and internet slang. So I'm going to give you a few and see if you know what these stand for. And okay. I didn't put any of the dirty ones.
I'll do
there.
My best.
DBA.
Oh, I don't know. That's tough.
Don't bother asking.
I knew the first one would probably be don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
QAP.
Question a brother.
Quick as possible. I have not heard of any of these either. VBD.
Very bad decision.
Very big deal.
Oh.
You're close. A couple more. FHO. It's toughy.
These are hard. I've never seen these ever once.
Friends hanging out.
Okay.
So, and then some people use 403 for deny access to. SNH, sarcasm noted here. YSVW, you're so very welcome. That's a polite one. L8TR, later, why can't you just write the word? It's almost the same thing. GRX, gracias. ULM, you love me. I don't know if that's a question or a statement. YGTI. You get the idea. And TLTR, too long to read. So if those that are more into the Shakespearean English, let's say, are frustrated by the American language, the American version of English, imagine how they're going to feel now with internet slang taking over.
Well, it's understandable why the Brits might not like some of those things. I don't like a lot of those either. Actually, with a lot of those shortened, I guess, acronyms, I'm pretty good at actually figuring out what they are if there's any sort of context.
Right.
If it comes at the end of a sentence or something like that, I get it pretty much every time. Then I'll look it up later and find out that I guessed right. But it's hard. It's really hard if you're just going through the list and you don't have any other bearings for what is being talked about.
Right. You're just throwing them out there. Yeah. The ones I usually see would be, in, I guess, comment sections or tweets. And a lot of them, I don't really know what they are. But I assume from the context they're bad.
Right.
And I'm like, I wonder what that means, but I haven't bothered to look up. I just feel like I just don't need it in my brain.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to use it. So therefore, I sometimes just to mess around, I do, if my wife and I are texting, we'll just send random emojis because I don't use them. So I'm like, I don't know, I'll send this one. And so the other morning, I've said this before, sometimes we'll text ridiculous things that we don't have to, but we just do because. And I'd woken up, she was out in the other room, and so I texted her. I wanted coffee, so I was texting her that I wanted coffee. And I think I just wrote coffee, and then I was looking for an emoji, and I couldn't find one that made sense, but there was a guy on a surfboard. I'm like, I don't know. So I put that on there. And then she's like, why does that make sense? I'm like, well, it doesn't. I'm like, but, you know, I thought, well, I'm waking up. It's like the new day. I'm surfing into the day.
Makes sense.
I try to pull something together. I'm content to admit that time has passed me by. I'm not part of that emoji generation, and so I'm willing to deal with that.
It looks like there's a fantastic movie coming out about emojis. A really humorous movie, really creative. So I might actually go see that and finally understand what people are doing with those now.
Yeah, if you make one that's popular, I imagine you can make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no shortage of the emojis. That's all the time we have for today on Trumpet Radio Live. I think next time we'll do it all in emojis. We'll do the entire show in emojis. It'd be complex over radio, but we'll figure it out. Make sure you listen for the Key of David and Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Those are on the way later today. For myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon, thanks for joining us. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.